Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much. We've now got about 10 minutes before lunch, so we've got a good time for questions to both Dame Julia and to David. So can I open up to the floor here? And obviously, if there are any questions from our online viewers, please put those through as quickly as possible. So any questions from the floor? Okay. All right, we'll start.
Richard Brabner from the University of Hertfordshire. My question's for David. I don't know if, in looking to develop the NTUB, whether you've looked at how the government and others have increased the number of apprenticeship places over the last decade, particularly look at how the National Apprenticeship Service has an online platform for matching apprentices with companies, and whether that's something that you could import in terms of the brokerage service, because I think that's so critical for the NCUB success and for the value for universities that are going to get out of it.
No, well, thank you for that. In truth, we're looking at all different brokering services now, different platforms, different ways of doing it. There's a lot of stuff out there, as you know. And one of our one of the kind of rules, actually, in a way that we set is we're never going to replicate. We're always going to build on. So we don't want to replace anything. We'll build on it. But you know, obviously, you need to kick the tires on everything to make sure that technology works for you, to make sure that the approach works for you. I haven't quite seen anything yet, which is exactly what I think we're trying to do. Which is why I think the piloting is so important. You know. I'm quite happy to make mistakes in public as long as I'm not betting the farm and everything. You know, it seems to me that it's a collaborative effort. So I'm very happy to go and talk to whoever you contact.
I think that's Julia's bag that's feeding back to engage with that.
Okay, is there a question right down the front here?
Cullen, Sheffield University Management School. Just a question for David. It's interesting that you use the term talent. Very often in debates, we've got employability skills and talent, and employers often suggest that they're looking for employability skills amongst graduates. Just interested in the notion of talent from a kind of university perspective.
Do you know, it depends which employer... Is that dead?
It really depends which employers you're talking about. If you go into any big company, they talk about talent. In fact, they don't have HR departments now. They've got talent departments. And the reason for that is quite simple, is that they're looking to develop their leadership teams. They're looking to develop the people who are going to innovate within their companies. They're looking to develop across their whole company, who's going to be the person who solves their problems. So you talk to someone like Jeremy Darroch at Sky, and Jeremy says that, you know, the people at the edges of his company are the ones who'll be the ones who are sorting out the future of Sky. So I'm very, and it's not just because I come from the entertainment industry that I focus on talent. It's definitely a concept that's very live inside most big companies. And it's certainly live inside most companies that I'm from my sector. Now, I recognize that in, say, a small engineering company, it might be a slightly different thing, but I still feel that if I was still teaching in universities and someone said to me, your job is to develop the talent of the next generation, I'd go, yeah, I'm absolutely up for that. If someone said, your job is just to develop the skills of for this industry, I'd be going, is that what I'm signed up for? So I think there's something about engaging with universities around what they're good at, which is developing individuals and whole individuals, but making sure they've got the underlying skills that are necessary to be successful in any particular business. So I tend to use the word talent in that broad sense with the underlying core idea of skills. But I just think the skills language has gone too far, I think, and it's not recognized by most of the business people I engage with. But I recognize that other business people do absolutely still use the S word all the time.
Actually, Dame Julia, could I ask you, for me, David's picked up on this, in terms of the challenge between the kind of the demands of students. We're now empowering students to make their choices of, you know, as Tim mentioned, you know, from a list of institutions rather than particular courses. They have in their own minds now increasingly what they want to get out from their university experience, which actually might not be anything about developing their own talent or skills or indeed the employability. They kind of think they're going to get all these things and get this whopping great salary at the other end. And yet actually there seems to be a kind of a set of things that business actually wants. And I think obviously for the university senior management, strategically you need to find the place between those two. I mean, do you think that that's something where actually we have a good enough understanding at the moment about how you can actually balance those demands and students' needs of business?
probably not the best vice chancellor to comment on that, because at Aston we have a kind of very, we are very business and professional, business and professional career focused, and that's why a very large majority of our students come to us, because they're interested in the kinds of jobs that our professionally focused degrees open the doors to, and they're interested in the graduate employment success that our degrees deliver. So we don't have, you know, the university, the students at the other end of the spectrum who want to study philosophy. It makes us a slightly different kind of environment, but it means that it's a bit easier to us to be focused on what our brand delivers for you. I think we're in for kind of that we are in for a lot of changes in what students want and expect. I think this recent Which survey that says some huge proportion of, 35% of first-year undergraduates do not believe their university are delivering value for money. Gosh, that's pretty different from what our third years or final years have been saying across the sector, which is that something like, on average across the country, 85% of them or whatever are satisfied, very satisfied with what they get from university. So I think we're all feeling a bit nervous about what happens when these first years become, in 2 or 3 years' time, our final years, and whether we'll have managed to persuade them to change their minds. So I think there's some very interesting changes going on. But I think, I actually genuinely, though I think there is a lot of parental pressure, particularly for, you know, some sectors, like many of our youngsters come from the state school sector, and a lot of parental pressure on employability and your need to get a good job. But actually, I still have a huge confidence that most students want to get more than employability skills from their university degree. They want to learn to think. It's a hugely important part of growing up. It's discovering yourself as an individual. There's all those good things that most of us got from being at university are very important. And I hugely welcome this move towards recapturing the idea that we develop talent and not that we train people in skills. Because I think the university experience has to be a much more whole experience. And I think the move away from just giving students a degree grade to universities providing them with a whole list of sort of accredited experiences to say that they have developed themselves as people in a whole range of ways, including all the fabulous volunteering they do, including starting their own companies with the student entrepreneurship schemes, including all of that in the statement we send to employers that kind of records their university experience. I think that's hugely important because it tells you a lot more about the person.
I think that's a great answer to the question. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions at the moment from the floor? Okay, I'm going to abuse my position, and I'm going to ask the final question to both of you. In a sense, we've been talking this morning now about the potential role that universities and businesses and business schools can actually play in terms of driving forward the economy. If there was one thing that actually you think that either, I'm going to ask the challenge, is there one thing that actually the government might do to actually enable the kind of impact that we're looking for, and there's actually one thing that business schools and indeed universities might do to actually respond to that? David?
I think I'm actually rather encouraged by what government's doing through its industrial strategy. That if it was sitting here having had this question 2 years ago, I'd say what we need is an industrial strategy. And I do think that they're on the right track. I think that the civil service and the policy thinking has to be much more sector specific. I mean, they may well have adopted the industrial strategy, but the level of sophistication you need to understand sector-specific innovation, I haven't yet seen. I still see too much generic innovation thinking as opposed to sector-specific. Where I think actually business schools can really help, apart from all the stuff we talked about today, is actually helping internally within universities to help train the next generation of entrepreneurs who want to be entrepreneurs within universities, and also work with academic colleagues across engineering and all those other great entrepreneurial departments. So there's an internal role for business schools, I think, as well as an external role.
Thank you, David. Dame Julia?
Let me just focus on a small thing that I really think would help. And that's about how we do rankings. Because we rank business schools for extraordinarily traditional things. We rank business schools for research that nobody in business reads. We rank business schools for MBA courses that businesses are now telling us are not the future of the kind of through career training support they want for people, and certainly aren't the kind of thing that helps small and medium businesses to grow and become drivers of the economy and indeed of prosperity and well-being. Because I like that phrase of David's as well. So, could we think about what good and great is in a business school? They don't all have to be the same, but can we think about new ways of identifying good and great so that we can actually inspire our business schools and our young academics to do the right things and not the old-fashioned things?
Well, that is a brilliant answer to the question, particularly because I can then say one of the things that the Association of Business Schools is doing in response to this report is which is to pick up exactly on that. And again, we're announcing today that we're actually going to be working with the publishing firm Emerald to try and look a much, much broader basket of metrics that can be used to actually start and measuring that. And I think I'd be delighted to have a conversation with you about that afterwards. So thank you so much. We're exactly on time. Thank you to both David and Dame Julia and indeed Tim for their presentations and their responses to the questions. It's now time for lunch, which will be served in the other room, and we're all due back here at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.